The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Look, the world is shocked over the events in Washington, D.C. yesterday, where insurrectionists rioted in the state, in the nation's capital, and gained access to the Capitol building. The man photographed sitting in Nancy Pelosi's chair, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, third in line for the presidency. Should anything happen to the president or vice president? That's kind of a serious office, right? The man who was photographed having kind of ransacked the office and sat in the chair is a self-described white nationalist, according to the Washington Post. There were others who put themselves on social media, one of them wearing a shirt that said 6MWE, meaning 6 million wasn't enough, meaning Jews killed in the Holocaust. Yet another man had a sweatshirt that said Camp Auschwitz. These are people rotten to the core, the worst among us, real degenerates who somehow gained access to the Capitol building, and the bad guys, and about which we all must agree. There's no dissent about that among righteous people. White supremacists are the bad guys. How were they able to get in the building? Those were African-American rioters. Do you think they would be alive to get in the building? If there were thousands of them, how many do you think survive? And how many would be locked up? Would there be any who weren't either dead or in jail? Because almost no one was arrested. There were reports between 12 and 50 arrests out of thousands of people. One person, four people dead, one of gunshot wounds. If the entire sports world is reacting to this, as most of the world is, in shock, but also in disgust at the attempted overthrow of a democratic election, a rejection of democracy by fascists. How else do you put it? And one thing that you keep hearing throughout the sporting landscape are African-American and white players and coaches making the point that were it black people storming the nation's Capitol building, they would never have gained access to it because they would have been shot dead and or arrested and imprisoned. Doc Rivers, 76ers head coach now, of course, at the pregame presser, discussing the civil unrest.
As an older black male, I've seen police dogs being unleashed on people, and then you see the day where there's nothing. And so that's an emotion that I have, right? You know, Tobias and those guys probably don't have that emotion. So, you know, and I don't know how many guys even watching TV today. You know, you just don't know, but you know it's going to be the talk for both teams. You know, Washington, just think about them. It's where they live right now. So they have a lot on their plate, probably worried about public safety of their families. So this is a tough one tonight, I got to tell you.
Look, Doc Rivers, you know, makes the same point I just told you everyone's making, and but goes further into it how he's old enough to remember police dogs sicked on peaceful black protesters. But look what happened here. By the way, how much of that is because there was an unredacted FBI report late last year, late in 2020, I think it was from September, which discussed the threat of white supremacists' infiltration into levels of law enforcement. So how much of it is that? There was video of law enforcement apparently letting the rioters in. Another took a selfie with one of the insurrectionists. And how much of it is the White House not cooperating in terms of keeping the peace, or actually aiding and abetting the rioters and the insurrectionists? Trump, after all, called the date January 6th, said there's going to be a problem, and then directed the mob toward the Capitol building. So I would suggest that I'm not going to do this whole show or segment about this. We do have sports to talk. But I would suggest that there's plenty of photographic evidence of the people involved because they are so stupid. They don't wear masks during a pandemic. And the FBI should gather all the information, if not during the however much longer the Trump administration lasts, because there are calls among many in government and in civil society for his removal by the 25th Amendment or by impeachment from Congress. But for however long it lasts, okay, if they won't do anything, then maybe the incoming administration will take the handcuffs off law enforcement, or the best elements in law enforcement, and prosecute the criminals, the debased criminals, to the full extent of the law. I've heard comments on social media from people saying, look, as a black person, I don't want, we'd have been shot, that's true. And I'm not asking for these people to be shot. I'm asking for no one to be shot, for arrests to be made for the unlawful, and unless they pose a deadly threat, for no one to be shot. And this is, Stephen A. and I talk about this on First Take a bunch, as it relates even to the process in Philly with Sam Hinkie. Stephen A.'s point is frequently that a black GM would never be allowed to get away with that. A white GM gets the tank for years. And he's pointing out white privilege. And my response to that is always, look, I ain't giving up any privilege. What I will insist upon is that all Americans are so privileged. In other words, if the privilege is being treated with respect as a human being and allowed to do your job to the best of your ability, for example, then I will insist that my fellow Americans are treated the same, no matter if they are black or white, young or old, male or female, whatever their orientation. Insist that everyone is so privileged. There's a long way to go. Football scientist coming up in a few minutes. I really want to get into, maybe I'll do it a little later in the show because I don't have enough time before Casey Joyner. I want to get into this, to the Suns and the Mavs, man. They're two of my, I think, the most interesting teams in the Western Conference this year. They're big threats to the Lakers, in fact. I don't think the Lakers are going all the way, but they're threats in the West. And the Mavs have a big game with the Nuggets coming up tonight. I want to get into that, but Casey Joyner joins me now, the football scientist, on the Goodyear Hotline. Casey, are you there? Casey?
I am here.
Hear a lot of cheering. Where's Casey Joyner? Oh, there he is. There he is. So, Casey, boy, I quote you all over the place on this shootout thing. You know, you were talking about, by the way, given the times we are in which we are living and what happened yesterday in the Capitol. Let me be very clear. I mean, on the NFL field, shootouts meaning high scoring games that feature a lot of vertical passing, right? But those kind of games, you've been saying those the Chiefs, for example, don't want to have those kind of games. That's why they rely on the run, because they're susceptible to losing those kind of games. Not that they don't win them more often than they lose them, but they almost never win other kinds of games, but they do sometimes lose those kind of games. What, heading into the playoffs, what can we expect from Kansas City and other kind of high-scoring offenses? Are they looking for shootouts, or do they want lower-scoring games in the playoffs?
I think that this year it might be a little bit different, because I did a study of the 14 teams in the playoffs and said, how often are they winning? I'm actually starting to call them track meets rather than shootouts. So, saying, how many times are you winning a track meet? And
track
these
meets,
teams combined win 71% of their track meets. 71% of them. It's to put that in perspective, I did a study a few years ago.
So, Casey, why are you giving me bum information? I've been running around saying you don't want a track meet. Now you're telling me you do?
I think it's a 2020 thing. I think a lot of it has to do with, because you don't have, I think a big part of it is you don't have crowds. You don't have these noisy crowds that can impact offenses and their ways and their abilities to make all these checks at the line of scrimmage. And because you don't have that, you've got nine teams in the playoffs that scored 450 or more points this year. That's just ridiculous. I think that's a big part of why this year teams might be less apt to stray away from these track meets, because they're able to keep scoring up in a way that they wouldn't if there were a loud crowd screaming at them.
So what are the what does KC want to do? What do the Chiefs want to do? I know they're not playing this weekend, but I'm interested in them because their defense ain't great, and they've been winning some nail biters. And you've told me in the past they want to rely on Clyde Edwards-Helaire and the run more than they do on just the high scoring game. What do you anticipate Kansas City is going to do?
Now, Kansas City this year, when they had those track meet games, they're 5-1 of those this year, which is a much better record than they had the past couple of years, and they were a 500 team in those matchups. So I think part of it is that they're going to want to lean in that direction. I think they've got some trouble, though, too, because Edwards-Helaire has been hurt. I don't think Le'Veon Bell has the kind of breakaway ability. He hasn't had breakaway ability for a few years. They should never have relied on him for that sort of thing. But I still think they're going to want to try to get back to as much of the running game as possible because they're last in the league in red zone defense. I mean, this is a team that they cannot afford to do that. Having said that, even if you're winning 70% of your games, as these teams are as a whole, even if you're expected to win 70% of your track meets, you get to three track meets in a row, you get a 1-3 chance of winning them. So I think Kansas City says we cannot afford to get in the 3D's track meets in a row. We've got to slow things down. I still think they're not going to go maybe back to power like they did last year, but they're going to lean on it more than they have of late because you're just not going to win these matchups against these powerhouse offenses.
So, meantime, we have some interesting matchups this weekend. Obviously, none of them are going to involve Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers, and I'm hoping they meet in the Super Bowl. Who's actually the best quarterback who ever lived, right? I don't mean the most accomplished or the greatest, Tom Brady, Joe Montana. I mean, you put your eyeballs on them, and you go, that guy. That guy's better than everyone else. The two best I've seen are Mahomes and Rodgers. I'd love to see them meet in the Super Bowl. But this first round does have some interesting matchups. A lot on the line for Lamar Jackson. And by the way, for Tannehill in that matchup, for Josh Allen and Phillip Rivers, when you survey the landscape this week, what game do you see where the underdog team is most likely to pull off the upset?
The underdog team is most likely to pull off the upset. I mean, I'm picking Seattle over the Rams easily. I'm picking Indy over Buffalo easily. The game I think is still going to be the closest is going to be Baltimore and Tennessee. The interesting thing is both of those teams, you think of powerhouse offense, you think of these high-scoring matchups, you think of these track meets, you don't think of teams that run the ball. But, I mean, Baltimore posted 3,000 yards now, rushing yards in two straight seasons, first time ever. Jackson is the first quarterback to ever post 1,000 rushing yards in two straight seasons. Derrick Henry is the first back to post 200 rushing yards and two rushing touchdowns in five games. These are two power-heavy teams, and their defenses are not handling the power run very well. So if I had to say which would be the most ripe for an upset, it would be that contest because I think that's a toss-up matchup.
Hold on. Let's go back for a second. KC, are you giving me another? Did you give me another bum steer? First, you told me about the Chiefs. They don't want the track meet, and I go run around talking about that. Oh, KC Joyner says they don't want to. And now you're saying, actually, they're 5-1 this year, so it's like it's changed already. And I know you're an empiricist, so what, you know, events that occur in the facts, you know, can change your mind. But now you're telling me you like the Colts easy over Buffalo or big over Buffalo. Didn't you tell me teams from weak divisions, like, for example, the Colts, don't do much in the playoffs?
If I did say that for Indianapolis, no, I meant I do think Buffalo will win that contest. If I misspoke and said the Colts are going to win, that's amazing.
Ah,
the okay. Colts' problem is if they have two turnovers.
You really threw me for a loop, boy. I was very confused, Casey. I also like Buffalo, as most people do there. I'm like, wait, the Colts big over the Bills? Okay, tell me about the Colts and the Bills.
The Colts and the Bills. The Colts, if they have two or more giveaways this year on offense, doesn't matter how many takeaways they get. If they give the ball away two or more times on offense, they're 2-4. They have one or fewer giveaways on offense, they're 9-1. Every time they get two turnovers on offense, they're going to have problems. I think Buffalo's racked up two or more takeaways nine times this year and have done it in five of the past eight games. Plus, the Bills, they're 5-1 in track meets this year, and the Colts are only 3-2. So if I'm looking at those factors, I'm pointing all those towards the Bills winning that contest.
Meantime, I talked about Lamar Jackson and the pressure on him earlier in the show, and you've gone over that game. We've gone over the Bills and the Colts, and I think there's a lot of pressure on Phillip Rivers, too. Obviously, Josh Allen, a top, you know, player this season, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I think he's established himself. Phillip Rivers, zero Super Bowls from the same draft class as Eli and Roethlisberger, who both won multiple Super Bowls. But, of course, the biggest name in the playoffs, period, is Tom Brady and his high-flying Bucks team right now, which seem to be peaking right at the exact right moment. But I think, boy, talk about week one pressure. You can't lose to a 7-win team that's lucky to get to those 7 wins because, you know, Doug Peterson pulls Jalen Hurts or goes, you know, kicks, doesn't kick the field goal and then pulls Jalen Hurts. And as a result of this, you have 7 measly wins and no real quarterback to speak of, an old injured guy and a young guy you don't even have anymore because you didn't want him. What happens in Washington and Tampa this weekend?
Definitely. Here's the thing. The football team's allowed 20 or fewer points in 7 straight games. They allow a total of 111 points in that span. They have 14 takeaways in the past 7 contests. And there was a time when Tampa Bay was having trouble. They had one span where they had, I believe it was 6 straight games with a turnover on offense, so a little bit of giveaway. That was a problem for them. Thing is that you mentioned that they're peaking at the right time. They got that Week 13 bye. Couldn't have been more perfect for them because they're, you know, it's an aging team and they get a rest late in the year. They've only had one turnover on offense since then. They scored 23 or more points in all but 2 contests this year. And the football team hasn't scored more than 23 points since Week 12. They've got 9 giveaways over the past 4 weeks. You add that to the Alex Smith and Antonio Gibson injury issues, and plus even Terry McLaurin was injured late in the year. If you add all those together, it's look, the football team's just going to have trouble keeping up this contest at all. So I think Tampa, even though it's a tough matchup, a tougher matchup than most people think, I think they're going to take this one handily.
Chase Young talking about he wants Tom Brady. He's going to get him. Chase Young is a stud at that position, especially given his age right now. The sky is the limit for him. Meantime, another aging quarterback who hasn't looked good in recent seasons, late in seasons, partly maybe because he was worn down, partly maybe because he didn't have a number two receiver, had a long rest from actually playing football. Of course, it was because of fractured ribs and a punctured lung that, you know, but Drew Brees now apparently is going to have Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, the number two receiver he's been missing, and Kamara, and a good defense. What do you think of the Saints matchup against the Bears, where Trubisky's played well late in the season, and that defense, of course, has the potential to be awesome in Chicago?
The thing about the Saints is that they get more production out of every facet of their roster than any team in the league. If you start to look at and take a look at the metrics of, okay, what do they produce here, here, and here, whether they get out of their second-string and third-string players, I think they get more production out of their roster than anybody in the league. That's their big plus. So they get their big guys back, makes them even more dangerous. Chicago's posted 30 more points and 380 more offensive yards in 4 straight games. Their rushing attack, they put up 100 more yards on the ground in 6 straight games. I think that's great. I think Trubisky being threatened with professional extinction, as it were, you know, being sat on the bench, I think that motivated him. But Chicago's allowed 27 or more points in 4 of the past 6 games. I think their defense is nowhere near as strong as it was earlier this year. So I just think that this game might turn into one of those proverbial track meets we keep talking about, and I think the Saints are better suited for that. Having said that, they're only 4-3 in track meets this year, so Chicago may have a better chance than most people think.
Real quick before I let you go, do you attribute the improved running game in Chicago to just the offensive line playing together and coming together as the season wore on?
I think that's part of it, and also, you know, they finally got some production out of the passing game that made teams get away from the run. If all you can do is concentrate on stopping the run, you can stop the run pretty consistently. But if you have to start focusing on the pass more, than it opens up the running lines. I really think that his willingness to be more aggressive and be more assertive once he came back into the lineup, I think that made a big difference to their ground game. And I think that, plus improved run blocking, but I think it's not just one factor, I think it's a combination.
KC Joiner, you can follow him at KC Joiner, the letters TFS, the football scientist, at KC Joiner, TFS. Joined us on the Goodyear Hotline. Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Thank you, KC. If the Bucks don't make the Super Bowl, who's that on? No Risk It, No Biscuit, or the GOAT?
Max, the podcast.
Talk about pressure. Who's under more in Tampa? Going to get to that in a second. You can reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And give me your upset of Wild Card Weekend. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance.
Chase Young and the Washington football team are pumped for their NFC wildcard contest with Tampa. He was heard saying, I want Tom.
He's a hell of a player. Yeah, we'll have our hands full, but it's one of those games where you better watch what you wish for.
If the Bucs don't make the Super Bowl, whose fault is it? And by the way, I realize I ask these questions and we're talking about sports. I'm not like, you know, unaware of the events going on in this country right now, the insurrection in Washington, D.C. at the behest of Trump, of President Trump, who, you know, lost by 7 million votes and doesn't want to admit it. He's, what is it now? He's got how many more days left in office? And we hope that, or 13 or fewer days left in office if he's impeached or the 25th Amendment is used to remove him. But at any rate, in 13 days, he won't be there anymore. And the hope is that this is as bad as it gets, but this is someone who has known no bottom. The sinking gets lower and lower. So I'm aware that all this is going on, and yet you've tuned into a sports network, and this is a sports show. And even though it sometimes feels awkward, given what's going on, it is an escape, and we are talking sports. If the Bucs don't make the Super Bowl, who's that on? You know what? It's, for me, it's not even the Super Bowl, to tell you the truth, because I don't care who you bring in. Year one, especially in a pandemic, you can't even really practice together, stuff like that. I'm not going to tell you, you must make the Super Bowl or it's a failure. But what would be a success for Tom Brady and the Bucs this year? Obviously, making the playoffs, they're supposed to. Jameis Winston threw 30 interceptions to the tune of 112 points for the other teams last year, and they won 7 games. So you bring in Tom Brady, not to mention Gronkowski and Antonio Brown, you know, for an ascending defense, and you'd expect at least, you know, the over-under was 9.5 games. I figured 10. I took the over, and he won 11. What would be the equivalent of winning 11, right? Like a successful season? Because I'd say making the playoffs, you have to make the playoffs. Winning a playoff game, yep, you should win the playoff game. You should win a playoff game. I think doing that, you've done what people would say, okay, that's give or take. Anything less than that, not good enough. You can't lose in the first round. But I think in order to consider the season a success, they got to make the AFC Championship game. You can't just win a playoff game. And if they don't, who will take the blame? Look, largely the same guy is going to get the credit for getting them there if they do, and he'll deserve the credit if he gets there, Tom Brady. Because he didn't simply play at kind of league average level, which is what I was expecting, actually. He played better than that. He played very well, especially as the season wore on. And remarkably well, considering his age. Yes, I know he's in a great situation with all those weapons. He still played remarkably well. He'll get the credit if they get there, but if that Washington defense gets to him and Chase Young makes good on his promise to go get Brady, he's going to get the blame and he'll deserve it. By the way, I got to say, the Lakers are my pick in the NBA this year. But out west, there are two teams in the Mavs and the Suns who I have my eye on. And the Mavs have the Nuggets tonight. Nuggets are without Porter Jr., but of course, the Mavs are without Kristaps Porzingis. And those are two powerhouse Western Conference teams. The Mavs are a little under 500. They made changes to the starting lineup recently. Hardaway Jr. coming off the bench. Maxi Kleba in the starting unit with Willie Cauley-Stein. By the way, I really think when they're fully healthy, if the Mavs run out a starting five of Hardaway Jr. with Doncic and Kleba and Dorian Finney-Smith and Kristaps Porzingis, that might be the best starting five in basketball. Unless the best starting five in basketball is in Phoenix. Guys, Phoenix is 6-2 and tied with the Lakers right now. Phoenix, you know what that means? Because they went 8-0 in the bubble. They're 14-2 in their last 16 games. They're winning 8 games for every game they're losing. No, that's not right. 7 games for every game they're losing. 7-1. There's 7 wins for every loss recently. Their last 16 games. 14-2. And they got better in the offseason. They caught fire in the bubble, and Devin Booker took the next step as a player, looking like a little mini Kobe Bryant. And then they bring in Chris Paul. Like, when you think about, as I said, that starting five, Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson are two excellent 3-and-D players. Like, it's one thing to be a player in name. In other words, the function of the player on this given team is to hit threes and play defense. But they don't hit threes so great. They just hit it well enough, and they defend pretty well, right? No, it's different when you say these guys can really stroke it from the outside and are lockdown defenders. They got some serious 3-and-D guys in Bridges and Johnson. And obviously, Chris Paul and Devin Booker, that's the best backcourt in basketball. The biggest question mark in the starting five is DeAndre Ayton, who's already a very good player, and Chris Paul should get the best out of him. Not to mention Jay Crowder, who they picked up, who's like the prototypical modern Swiss Army knife, can guard multiple positions and do multiple things on offense type player. Suns and the Mavs, man. I wanted to throw it out there because I've been meaning. It's funny because I have 2 hours on the radio every day to talk about the stuff I want to talk about. But a lot of time you get caught up in the news cycle, and I just don't get to talking about some of my pet subjects that I really want to put out there. And the Mavs and the Suns are two of them. Mavs only 3-4 right now, and they haven't won consecutive games all year. But if they beat the Nuggets tonight, they'll be 4-4, having won two in a row. And again, this is all without, by far, their second-best player. 888-SAY-ESPN, Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Anthony in Florida, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, I was just calling to give you my hot take on whose fault it's going to be if the Bucks don't make it to the Super Bowl. Me being down in Tampa, season ticket holder, lifelong Bucks fan, it's got to be Bruce Arians' fault. I've been to multiple games this year. Ronald Jones, if he rushes over 12 attempts, he's almost a guaranteed lock to rush for 100 yards. Going into weeks 14 or 15 when he had COVID, he was the fourth leading rusher in the NFL with under maybe 150 carries for the season. You got to give that kid the rock. Mm-hmm. Open the play action up. Let Tom Brady work out of the play action. He's statistically the most accurate quarterback out of the play action this season. You got to run the rock like we did in 02 when we won the Super Bowl. Go Bucks.
I think it's a good point. I think that one of the reasons you can get away from a run game if a guy gets COVID is because they're not the same for a while. But look, Tom Brady under pressure. It's funny when you say quarterbacks under pressure because it's like saying in boxing, you know, the guy doesn't like it to the body. No one likes it to the body. No quarterback wants the pressure. Even the fast ones, right? Oh, it can open up a big play. You get pressure on a quarterback. That's good for your defense, bad for the quarterback. But Tom Brady, especially in recent years, it's really bad for him. And Washington does have the ability to get pressure on the quarterback without bringing extra guys. And Chase Young is, you know, you have some young studs in the NFL who are pass rushers, right? The Bosa brothers. Those dudes are animals. Miles Garrett's a monster. You know, you have some stud young pass rushers drafted first or second in recent years. As an overall package long term, I might like Chase Young's upside the most. And the fact that he said, and even Arians, like, nah, he's just, you know, he respected it, he liked it almost, but he also admitted it gave them bulletin board material. You know, they were talking about it in Tampa, what Chase Young had to say. This is, by the way, great wild card weekend, don't you think? All the games are very interesting. It's not the case every year where most of the playoff matchups you go, oh, wait a minute, Saints-Bears? Yeah, I want to see that. Bucks-Washington is the worst one, but yeah, I want to see that. I want to see Chase Young and Tom Brady. Yeah. Can Lamar do it? Or do the Titans beat him again? Phillip Rivers and Josh Allen, can Rivers finally advance in the playoffs? In recent years, it hasn't been good for him. Big Ben is back in the playoffs, but not with familiar faces. Last Take is next.
Max, the podcast. You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
By the way, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, is guiding this young Steelers player through the playoff whirlwind, right? Last time Pittsburgh was in the playoffs, the Killer Bees were there with Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. Now only one playoff start among its receivers and backs on that team. They got their work cut out for them. I know Stefanski's not going to be there. I think that's of all the games I've talked about, I really haven't spent time today on that one. I think the Browns actually have a much better chance at an upset than people realize. Lee in Idaho, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. What is your last take?
You know what? First and foremost, Max, I just want to say, I know I have to get to my thing, but I appreciate what you do. You are my hero, and I want to grow up and be like you. And going into this, I was talking about the Mavericks. Do you really think when Kristaps Porzingis gets better, they're going to be that much better? I find them like they're 3-4 right now, and I know they're missing a key piece, but do you think that they're going to really push the Lakers?
Oh, yeah. I think the Mavericks, if you look at last year's playoffs, and I know Seth Curry is now Jason Richardson on that team, but Richardson is an excellent defender and a good enough shooter, right? But they have plenty of offense, and Kristaps at 7'3", the things he can do offensively and defensively, they were better than the Clippers. I think they would have beaten the Clippers, who I picked to win the whole thing last year, in under 7 games if Porzingis stays healthy. And by the way, one of those losses was total BS. Porzingis was blown, a whistle was blown on one end of the court, one was missed on the other end of the court, and then he was ejected unfairly. They would have won that game too. That's when the Clippers took off, when Porzingis was out of the game. He totally changes the other team's offense. And again, the starting five is as good as, Hardaway Jr. with Doncic and Kleba and Dorian Finney-Smith and Kristaps Porzingis, is tough. Really tough. I absolutely think he makes that kind of difference. Yes. Scott in Colorado, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Yeah, we are here, and Watson might want out. So I'm wondering, as a Bronco fan, what would it take? I was thinking Drew Lock, their first-round pick, Von Miller, and wide receiver Tim Patrick, plus maybe next year's first-round pick.
I don't think you're going to get Deshaun Watson. He just, he signed his deal. Look, here's the truth of the matter. If you're the Denver Broncos, let me tell you what I would give for Deshaun Watson. My whole team. I would rather start a team, like if I had two options, just Deshaun Watson and no one else on the team, and I have to figure it out through unsigned free agents and draft picks and whatever else I could muster, or the team I have now, no Deshaun Watson, I think I'd rather start with Deshaun Watson. So, like, if the question is, would you trade X, Y, or Z? I mean, the only thing I wouldn't give up is, like, forever future first-round picks, because you got to build your team through the draft. But what you have now in terms of actual players, yes, there's no combination of players I wouldn't trade for Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson was just about as good as anyone over the second half of the season. He was amazing over the second half of the season. Goff is practicing. And McVay still hasn't named the starter, L.A. What? You know Wolford got cut by the Jets, right? On and off of practice squads around the league. You won't commit to Jared Goff if he's healthy? What is going on with the Rams? You look at the Rams and say, why can't they win the Super Bowl right now if Goff can at least play above average quarterback? He's practicing and has not been named the starter. Oof. Keep our eye on this tomorrow. By the way, speaking of which, NFL whip around is tomorrow. Some good games to start it off. Until then, Jadane Golic Jr. coming up right now. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to The Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.